welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and here for another show today. Of course, obviously, we're going to be talking rookies, the 2015 rookie class. We're going to be looking at rookie projections and what to expect for rookies for this season and what to expect for them for future seasons. I am not doing this one alone. I am going to be joined by RotoWire's master projector, Mark Roberts. Mark, how are you going?
I'm good, Josh. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to have you on again. It's been a while since we last spoke. I think it was the mock draft that we did when you were having some spotty internet connections in a hotel.
Yeah, the hotel. That was not a fun experience for a lot of reasons, but we moved it into our home now, so hopefully the podcast connection is good, and hopefully anyway, we were living in like a tiny, tiny space, and so that has also been a little better for our, I have a couple little kids, so anyway, we're excited to not be in that hotel anymore for a lot of reasons, but one of them is so that we can do podcasts
again. Definitely, it's good to hear you on a crystal clear connection as opposed to a somewhat spotty connection that we had last time. Now, Mark, before we get into this, where can everyone find you on Twitter?
You can go to at Mark F. Roberts, and the Mark is spelled with a C.
The Mark is spelled with a C. And Mark does all of RotoWire's projections, so we're going to be picking his brain about his rookie projections. Before we get into the rookie stuff, Mark, a couple of things I want to touch on. Just a quick apology to everyone for the last couple of episodes. The outro music, something happened in my editing software, and the volume was just boosted to about 4,000,000%. So I blew out everyone's eardrums, and there was a lot of blood trickling down people's heads. So I do apologize for that. The music has been corrected. So at the end of this podcast, the volume will be back at a more normal level. So I do apologize for that. Second thing is, I encourage everyone to head across to the website allstar5.com. It's a new website Mark and myself are involved with, along with Seth Klein, Matt Smith, and Joey Mamone from Hashtag Basketball. Just something we're looking at doing. Basically, it's like fantasy basketball advice on a new type of platform. So have a go over there, have a read of it. It's allstar5.com, and register your interest if you are interested in it. Mark, that should be a good little thing that we're looking at doing at the moment.
Yeah, I think that should be interesting, I think, to all your listeners. And if we need to sing the outro music, Josh, I think you and I could handle that.
We could. You're offering to sing for me?
I would do a duet with you.
Okay, we'll have to brainstorm for a song, and we'll do that. I have sung on podcasts before, as many of you would have heard. It was pretty poor, Mark. I'm not sure if you heard that last attempt I had with Kyle on the post draft podcast we did.
No, I watched some of that. I didn't get all 2.5 hours in though.
Yeah, we're about 2 hours 25 deep into that podcast when me and Kyle and Nick just started talking music, and then Kyle just wanted me to start singing, so I started singing, and it was not a good experience for many people, I'm sure. Now, a couple other things. I do have some big news about the podcast. I am not going to announce it just yet because I need to just work out a few more details, but there is some exciting news about the podcast coming, hopefully within the next week, so stay tuned for that. I did tease that on Twitter, but I can't reveal it just at this point. Upcoming podcasts, myself and Matt Smith are going to be doing a Dynasty Rankings podcast tomorrow. We've both gone through our top 100 Dynasty Rankings for 8-cat Roto Leagues, and we will be announcing those tomorrow. Mark, this is a question without notice. I want you to, have you got a player that you want to know where I've got ranked as a tease for my Dynasty Rankings? One player in particular.
Ooh. Goodness, I was going to ask you about somebody this morning and I forgot who it was. Where do you have Durant? I think that's probably the most interesting one to me.
I have Durant at 4.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, I have.
So
I
who
have.
Are, yeah, people can sit there and think for the rest of the week, who is above Durant? Who are the three guys above Durant? I'm not asking you. I'm just saying people can think about that before the podcast.
They can think about that. But the main reason I've got in there is I am worried about the foot. And because if the foot is a problem this season, the foot could be a problem for the next two, three seasons. If he's fine next season, then it's all a moot point. But if he does have problems this season, it could be a recurring issue that does drop him down. So it's sort of going both ways. Like, he could be the number one guy, he could be the number two guy, but there is that risk there, so that's why I knocked him down to 4. I could end up looking really stupid, but that's why he's sitting at number four. So interesting choice there of who you wanted to go for. And one other question I want to ask you before we get into talking about the rookies is that the Red Rock listener leagues have all kicked off this weekend, the drafting. Mark, I've got 12 leagues of 12 teams, so 144 Red Rock listeners are involved in these leagues. They're a head-to-head league, eight-category leagues. In the league that I am in, which is the Red Rock Listener League Stacey Augman Division, the names are quite interesting with the divisions. They'll all be released at some point, but I went with a mix of eclectic names from the 1992 NBA season. Don't know why, but that's what struck me at the time.
Why not? Yeah, Stacey Augman. I haven't thought about Stacey Augman for 15 years.
My name was Stacey Augman. It was triggered in my mind being at Summer League and seeing his jersey hung up in at the rafters at the Thomas and Mack Center. So I've always had a big thing for Stacey Augman. I think it was back collecting basketball cards back in that 92 season. His name started with A, one of the first cards that would come out, and he was always someone that I was interested in. I don't know why. He's always stuck in my head. But the thing I wanted to mention in the league...
The Plastic Man, right? It wasn't the best nickname?
Yeah, also one of the best nicknames of all time as well. Now...
I never understood that one, but...
I think it's something to do with his long, stretchy, bendy type arms. I don't really know. I think that's what it is. Someone may want to enlighten me as to why he's called the Plastic Man. But what happened in our league, Mark, is Tom was picking at the turn, so pick 12 and 13, and he went with Andre Drummond and DeAndre Jordan at pick 12 and 13. What are your thoughts on that?
Interesting. I mean, I guess he doesn't want to compete in the free throw category, huh?
Yeah, exactly. He's obviously laid his hand out, and he wouldn't get either of those guys back at his third and fourth pick.
Yeah.
I've got no problem with it. I think some people were going, well, that's a bit early, but I've got no issue with it. And when you're picking at the turn in snake drafts, you have to realize you're not picking at 12 and 13 necessarily. You're picking a guy who might be, you know, in the 20s or 20, 25, because you're not going to get a pick in that range. So if there's a guy that you want that, you know, is ranked, I mean, rankings are a bit bullshit half the time anyway, but if a guy's ranked at 22 and you really want him on your team for what you're trying to do, you pick him at 12 and pick him at 13, because your pick doesn't come back around until... My maths is bad. 37 or whatever, 36, whenever the next one is, and it's a long way away. So yeah. I'm okay with it.
I'll tell completely. You the thing I like about it is he's clearly got a strategy, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you always like to see the guys in your league have a specific strategy. That's what makes it fun. So
yeah, look, blocks.
Whether other people think those guys are too high, but you're right. Like, you're never going to get those guys again. He's going to get free throw, field goal percentage probably. He's going to get rebounds. He's going to get blocks.
He's almost locked up three categories.
Steals.
It depends on what he does the rest, but he's almost locked up three categories with those two guys. We're talking about the two of the biggest rebounders, block shots, not necessarily the two biggest guys, but up there, and field goal percentage. We're talking two guys who could go, you know, 60% and 65%.
Yeah, and if you can get, you just need two more, right? You've got an eight category league.
Yep.
You get assists, and you're actually in a pretty good spot for steals. So if you can get steals and three-pointers or steals and assists with the rest of your picks, you're in really great shape.
Yeah, I really like what Tom did at pick 12 and pick 13, obviously the turn there. Sometimes it's not an easy spot, but I think he's done a really good job with it. For the record, I picked DeMarcus Cousins at pick 4 in that league. I had the option of going with Durant, but I think I was a little risk-averse and took Cousins at 4. See how that
Well, and that's not a bad in a head-to-head league. If you're, I mean, and you're definitely planning on punting a category. I don't know what it is.
I am, and there's no turnovers as well, which is one of the downgrades of.
Yeah,
I'll throw it out. I'm punting assists in this league.
Yeah, so if you're getting rid of a category and you're not worrying about DeMarcus Cousins' turnovers, he may be better than Durant when Durant's healthy.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
I'm expecting a massive, massive season from him. And you're right. Take the turnovers out. I was debating Durant and Cousins at 4, but I'm pretty happy that I took Cousins out. I think I've never owned him before, so we'll see how it goes. Watch him go down with some odd injury that really throws me completely out of it. But I'm happy with it. Bit of a gamble, but we'll see how it goes. The other good thing about all these listener leagues, Marks, I've got 12 of them happening at once, is I'll get a small sample size of some ADP data, all 12 leagues, all head-to-head. And then at the end, I'll be able to see where these guys have gone, just because there's no data at this point because no one's really drafting. But 12 leagues at once, we'll get a little bit of something happening, and I will publish that once all the drafts are completed. Now, let's talk rookies.
Yeah, let's talk rookies.
I think it's the obvious.
You hung out with them all this year in Summer League, didn't you?
I have. I've seen a lot of them up close and personal. Not as many as I wanted to because some of them obviously weren't playing there, but I still saw a lot. Let's start the obvious spot. Carl Anthony Towns. I've been on record as saying this everywhere. To me, he is the number one prospect out of this class for a dynasty league. Clearly, you'll see where me and Matt have got him in our dynasty rankings in the show tomorrow. But what do you think about him for this season? Is he your number one rookie for this season? How do you see him playing things out in terms of his translation in his first season, his minutes in Minnesota? What do you see happening with Towns? There's a lot of question marks to me.
Well, let me just, I guess, pull back the curtain and tell you where I'm at in the projection process at RotoWire. And you can see where some of the stuff I'm going to have to kind of talk off the cuff. And some of it I've got a lot of information prepared. So I've gone through for all the rookies and I've looked at their player comps and I projected out their per possession stats for next season. And I feel pretty confident about those. I'm still going through the process of doing all the veteran stats. And so I haven't gone in and slotted in what sort of playing time I think each player is going to get, looked at the rotation. I guess I kind of have, and that's the whole thing. Like if we're talking about next year, it's going to be who plays. Like look at last year, Jordan Clarkson got a lot of minutes. He's probably not going to be the guy that you put at the top of the dynasty rankings of last year's rookies, but he got enough playing time that he's a relevant player. So if you're looking at just next time, I think, or next year, I think the majority of what you're looking for is playing time. I could see it going one of two ways in Minnesota, right? You could see it going where they're a little bit conservative with him. That's probably where I'll put him, around like the 28 to 32 minute range, I would guess. But last year, Andrew Wiggins played the second most minutes of any player in the NBA last season.
Yep.
And he was a rookie, and there was a lot of wing players on that team when the season started. So Flip Saunders does have a propensity to play rookies and players a lot of minutes. I mean, there was times during the season where all, four or five of the Minnesota starters were playing 40 plus minutes a night. So I suppose he could do that with Towns. And in that case, Towns has, not just because he's the most talented player, but because he maybe has the biggest opportunity for playing time. I think I'm probably with you.
His numbers, to me, it is dependent on playing time and what they want to do. I think we can both say that Pekovic is not going to be a starter or a starter minutes guy. Garnett is going to be a starter, but he's not going to play starters minutes. But there is Gorgui Jang.
And he might only play home games or something strange like that.
Yeah, he's not going to be a factor fantasy-wise. All they've said is he's definitely going to start, Garnett, that is. And we don't know what that means, but he's not playing more than 20 minutes a night. And that's fine.
No.
He's got another purpose there on that team, and that's okay. But Gorgui Jang's there, who's another young guy who they like developing as well. And then there's Adrian Payne that's there. There's Anthony Bennett that's there. Now, not that they're going to necessarily cut into Towns' minutes, but I can see them starting with Garnett and Jang at the start of the season and then running Towns maybe 24 minutes to start off and then ramping it up to maybe 25, 28, 30 minutes by the end of the season. It's not like they're devoid of young guys there.
I think that's
there.
A great...
Because, Jang's a young guy
I think
too.
Your expectation is exactly right there.
That puts him to me... I can't give you my total season projections because not everything's been done in terms of looking at numbers and all that sort of stuff. But he's got the most fantasy-friendly game out of this class. Would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, look, he was... Just in the player comps I looked at, he's by far going to be the best rebounder on a per-possession basis in the draft class, I think. Blocks he's going to excel in. He's a pretty good scorer. He comes out as a pretty good scorer. And the great thing is for a center, for a big man, he's going to shoot good from the free throw line.
Yep.
I worry a little bit about his field goal percentage, but aside from that, I think he's going to be on a per minute or a per possession basis, he's going to be a stud.
His field goal percentage will be bad to start the season. It's pretty much universal for every rookie, no matter who they are. Before we hit 2016, he'll be shooting 42, 43%. And then he might crank it up to 48, 49 by the end of the season. But in his career, he's going to be a 52, 53 sort of percent guy, I would say. He'll be a 79 to 80% free throw shooter. He can hit three-pointers. We didn't really see him do that a huge amount at Summer League. He took them, didn't really hit them. But he's going to be a guy who's a two-plus blocker game guy. He's going to be a potentially a 20 and 10 sort of player who could get a steal a game with two blocks, with half a three, with elite percentages. And that projects to be exceptionally high as a fantasy guy, if all those things come true, which is always a big if, but he could project out really highly. The thing that worries me this year with him is his foul rate. He could have his minutes limited not only by the other guys around, but by the propensity he has to get fouls. So that worries me. Look, the rudimentary numbers I've looked at here is if I've got him playing 28 minutes, that's about 7 fouls for him in 28 minutes, which is obviously not going to cut it, so he's not going to get to 28 minutes. So that could be another issue, and he fouled at a pretty high rate in Summer League as well. But it's safe to say Dynasty Targets, Towns is number one. Do you think he's going to be the number one rookie drafted, and do you think he should be the number one rookie drafted for standard redraft leagues?
I certainly don't have a problem if you go with him. I do think probably he has the highest upside because, again, I think there's that situation where Flip Saunders plays him more minutes than any rookie. We saw it last year with Wiggins. You mentioned the deep front court, but he's not better than any of, I mean, he's the best of that group.
Yep.
It's not like if Karl-Anthony Towns is ready to play next year, they're not going to say, well, we got to get minutes for Anthony Bennett or we got to get Gorey Dieng in there. Those are nice players, but, Towns is by far their best player. So if he's ready to play, I think he'll play. I think you can make an argument for some of the other guys, but you know, if I had to draft right now and it was time to pick a rookie, I would go with Towns.
The other guy that I would make a case for, and that I think I will make a case for in head-to-head leagues, is Emmanuel Mudiay. I think that he can be the number one rookie for head-to-head leagues, not for roto leagues because his percentages are going to be pretty bad, but I think he's got, we talk about opportunity, Mark, mm-hmm. and he has got the most opportunity out of everybody, or maybe aside from Jahlil Okafor, but he can do a lot. He can score, he can rebound, assist, he can get steals, he can hit threes, maybe at a poor percentage, but he can do all that sort of stuff. And he's going to be able to contribute in multiple categories.
No, and again, we're talking about opportunity. He's got probably like the highest floor of somebody who's going to get playing time. You know, you just laid out the scenario where Okafor plays 22 to 24 minutes a night. That's a real scenario that could happen, and it's most likely to happen at the beginning of the season. Denver has kind of a wonky rotation. Like, I don't know exactly who's going to play, but Mudiay is the point guard. That's like the one.
Yep.
That's the one position that we know. And so, what's the floor on his minute? If you were saying there's a spectrum 30, or a range of minutes, is his bottom 30? Yeah. He's going to play at least 30. Right?
Yeah. Everything that's come out of Denver is that we are giving this to Mudiay. This is Mudiay's team now. We are running with him. We are sinking and swimming with him. It has to be 30. I know Jameer Nelson's there, and he's going to be great, but as a mentor and a guy there, but he's not going to play more minutes than Mudiay as a general rule. They will play some together because Mudiay is so big, he can play off the ball. And the other guy playing at the two is Randy Foy, so it's not like he's displacing a great shooting guard out of that situation. So they will play together. They played Ty Lawson and Jameer Nelson together at times last year, so they're going to be able to play Nelson and Mudiay together. He is going to get big minutes. He's going to get big counting stats. You just have to watch those percentages, which in that situation, when he's getting such a big role, in a roto league, he's gonna have a lot of attempts, a lot of field goal attempts that put it down. I don't know about his free throw attempts. Depends how often he's attacking. Rookies don't generally get a huge, rookie guards don't necessarily get a huge amount of free throws, but that will be an issue. But overall, head to head, I would probably at this point have him as the number one guy, with Towns having the most upside.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
How do you look at Mudiay's stats coming from China? How are you able to project and translate what he's able to do? He only played 12 games in China as well, we've got to remember.
Yeah. I think that's important to mention. So even if I had a good way to project his stats, I probably wouldn't have, because he only played such a small sample game. So a lot of the international guys are fairly easy, like Przonia and Hezonja. Przingis and Hezonja. I mixed those two names there for a second. There's like a well-defined league with lots of players that have come over. So their translation is just about as easy as a normal college stats. With Mudiay, his is really a shot in the dark. His is my least confident translation. But what I've done is I've taken NBA rookies who are a similar age, a similar size, and play a similar position. So you're looking at guys. The one that I remember right off the top of my head, I can pull it up, but one I remember right off the top of my head is like Tyreek Evans.
Yep. That's the one I've got in my head as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a perfect system, but you're taking players like that who came to the league really young, who played point guard, who were big guys, and you're looking at what they did, and I kind of just try to piece it together. It's a little more, in that one instance, it's a little more art than science. Let's see. I can pull up the other guys that I compared him to. So Drew Holiday, Zach LaVine, Tony Roten, Dante Exum, Sean Livingston, Marcus Smart, Elfrid Payton, John Wall, Austin Rivers, James Harden, Lance Stephenson. These are all guys that were kind of big point guards coming after just a year removed from high school.
Yeah.
I looked at those and I put them together. So, you know, I see something like if he plays around 33 minutes a game, which I think is maybe a fair expectation, I could see him getting 12 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds and 1.3 to 1.5 steals or something like that. As you mentioned, probably pretty poor percentages.
They're not going to be ideal, but the other numbers have got a potential. And all rookies, Mark, we talk about these numbers. This is what he's going to average. But if we look, you know, 2015 versus 2016, you're going to almost in every single case see worse numbers in the first 2 months of the season and better numbers at the second half of the season. And last year, Andrew Wiggins, Nerlens Noel, Nikola Mirotic, you couldn't own them pretty much for that November-December stretch. They were bad. Like they were, especially like Noel and Mirotic was doing nothing. But then you get to January, February, and there we're talking about guys, and Mirotic had a stretch of being a top 30 guy. Noel was a top 30 guy down the stretch. Wiggins had a big stretch of being a top 20 guy, faded a little bit towards the end of the season. But they all get going when the calendar ticks over, when we head to that all-star sort of break, and they get better and better. So these averages, yeah, it'll be worse at the start, they'll be better at the end, and they'll fall somewhere in the middle. So it's all a balancing act. Can you hold on to them when they're terrible? But Moutier's got this floor that's quite high, I think.
Yeah, and you know, the good thing is head-to-head playoffs take place at the end of the season. So if you can keep hold of them, they're going to really pay off then.
That's right. That's Jordan Clarkson's the perfect example of that last year when he just came good. At that time, Zach LaVine as well, when they were putting up big numbers towards the end and ended up being like top 40 guys down that last couple of months of the season, something which they're probably unlikely to repeat this season. Let's move to D'Angelo Russell, who I was not overly impressed with at Summer League. He just looks slow to me, Mark. The problem...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch any of it, but it seemed like it was somewhat of a disaster for him at Las Vegas.
I don't know if it was a disaster totally. He's just, look, his passing was fantastic. His passing vision was great. And it's Summer League's not a great time to be a good passer because the people at the end of your passes aren't necessarily good players who are finishing the shots. And that, you know, affects his turnover rate and his assist rate and all that sort of stuff. But he just looks slow against guys that he should be able to beat athletically. That was the problem, his ability to get to the rim. His shot didn't fall, but that's fine. I got no issue with his shot. He shot over 40% from three in college. I think he can be a pretty decent three-point shooter at some point in his career, but it was more just a lack of athleticism and lack of he's not Kyle Anderson slow, but he was just he didn't bounce off the court like watching me go, look at this guy move. Where is his explosive first step? In saying that, the Lakers don't have a huge amount of talent, but they do have a glut of guys in the backcourt. Clarkson, who we've mentioned, Kobe, obviously, who's almost definitely going to play the three. But then there's Lou Williams around as well. There's Nick Young around as well. What do we look at for D'Angelo Russell? And do you think he's a must-own standard league guy this year? Or must-draft standard league guy?
I wish you could tell me what Byron Scott was thinking.
I was standing next to Byron Scott a lot. He was constantly wearing this beret-type hat. I wanted to go. I was stood right next to him. I just wanted to go, can you just give me something, just some common sense? But I was afraid he'd belt me. He was just, he's a lot bigger than me. And but his hat needed a lot of work. But anyway, that's beside the point.
Well, clear from your hat story that he doesn't make all the best decisions. we saw that last year with his rotation. My guess is, just, you know, no information, I've read nothing. My guess is he's going to play as veterans.
Yep.
Right? And maybe he considers Clarkson in there, but my guess is Clarkson owners will be a little disappointed too. I think you'll see, and this will be weird and kind of a disaster maybe, but are we going to see a lot of Lou Williams and Kobe Bryant together in the backcourt, not playing defense together?
I'm sure that'll happen. And you mentioned about Clarkson owners. Clarkson is going to be overdrafted horrendously this year, I feel. I feel that people... Like, what he did last year was fantastic, but this is a completely different situation. I know we're not talking about, you know, Clarkson here necessarily, but that could be the best stretch of his career, or at least for the next 2 years, what we saw from him last year. He's not going to replicate those. I don't think he's going to. There's just too many guys there, and Byron Scott's just going to mess everything up. I can't see it being good. And that's gonna be a problem for Russell as well. Now, he may start from day one. They will probably run Russell, Clarkson, and Kobe as the 1, 2, and 3. Doesn't mean he's going to play 30. Yeah, I know. But they've literally got no one else to play the three. There's no one else playing the three there in that team. It has to be Kobe. But that backcourt is not going to be ideal. But Clarkson, if he gets 30 minutes, I think his numbers will be okay. Now, I don't think he's going to go out there and put up a huge amount of assists, but he could give you 13 points, could give you 4 assists, a steal. He could hit 1.5 threes a game. But like all rookies, or nearly all rookies, especially rookies at the pointy end of the draft here, they get overdrafted in fantasy leagues. I think that'll happen to
him. I don't think Clarkson and Russell can both be relevant in standard leagues. I don't see the path that they both get enough playing time. And again, for that type of player, you need at least 28 minutes, probably closer to 30, and there just isn't going to be that opportunity for both. My guess is, unless we hear something definitive like D'Angelo Russell is starting, I'm probably staying away in standard league drafts. I'm going to let somebody else take him, probably drop him, and then when he becomes relevant, I'll hope that I can pick him up at that point. I think, you know, his projection on a per possession basis isn't a ton different than a lot of the guys at the top of the draft. I think he could be an excellent scorer. I think, you know, he could get a lot of assists and maybe even steals and rebounds if he plays, but I feel not great about his playing time.
That is a problem. Look, you're right. His rebounds come out at a pretty good rate for a point guard. His steal numbers come out pretty well as well. His percentages should project to be okay at some point in his career. I am worried about that first step for him, but to me, you're right. I think that both him and Clarkson will go inside the top 100, and I don't necessarily think that they should.
I'm not sure either of the... If I had to bet, I'm not sure either of them should be in the top 100.
Oh, yeah,
maybe by the end of the season if one of them doesn't go, but I wouldn't pick either of them in the top 100,
even if I
knew where they were starting.
Yeah, because you just don't... I didn't even talk about Nick Young. Nick Young's another guy who's going... Like, I know Byron Scott hates him, but he's going to get some minutes playing in the backcourt.
Yeah.
He's going to get something. Yeah. And we're talking about these five guys who all, you know, could stake a claim to, you know, I deserve 25 minutes plus, and there's not 25 minutes plus there for all of them. So someone's going to miss out. Who's it going to be? Well, we don't know at this point. And that is risky when you're looking to draft these guys. And look, someone's going to go get Clarkson or Russell, who we're talking about here. They're going to go, and I'm picking him at pick 75, and I'm just going to go, thanks, you can have him, because that's not for me at that point. How's his dynasty project, do you think?
I think he's going to be pretty good. Just to wrap up what you were saying, and I'll touch on is where I think his stats are headed. It's not just like an unknown situation. We should probably have a bias against D'Angelo Russell simply because his coach has not been the most rookie-friendly coach. Like, he's not exactly a nurturer and a developer. He is a guy who plays veterans, and he's got Kobe Bryant, who I think has a lot of say in the rotation. And if D'Angelo Russell struggles, I think he won't play a ton of minutes. I think his long-term value... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the thing we need to remember is Jordan Clarkson was great, but it took an injury to Ronnie Price to get him into the lineup.
That is everything you need to know.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Byron Scott. Anyway, D'Angelo Russell, I think, will be one of the best scorers. And on a per-possession basis, I think he'll be one of the top scorers of all the rookies next season. He's one of the only rookies that I projected over 20 minutes or 20 points per 100 possessions next season.
I actually projected him the same as well, over 20.
Yeah, right around 20, 21. I think his assists relative to everybody else, he'll have one of the highest assist rates. You mentioned his rebounds come out pretty strong. I think just like the other rookie guards, I think he'll struggle. I think he'll be right around a 40% shooter. I think eventually that will come up. I think he's going to take close to the most amount of three-pointers per 100 possessions next season. I think his three-point attempt rate will be high, and therefore his three-point make rate will be high, which is something to look for. You know, if Moutier has has something that he's probably going to struggle with. It's that so many point guards make a ton of three-pointers, and he's probably not going to make a ton of three-pointers. And Russell, if he got that playing time, I think could compete in three-pointers with his other, you know, with the other point guards in the league.
Yeah, so he's not a complete write-off, but again, I think that the hype is going to exceed where the true value lies for him. But he does have some pretty good dynasty value with his ability to get these numbers in those categories we talked about. Jahlil Okafor, probably everyone's favorite for rookie of the year at this point. Does he falls to me in the DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond, Dwight Howard, Nerlens Noel category of you cannot deal with him in a roto league. Would you agree with that based on what you've seen with his projections?
Yeah, so he was one of the, if not the only, I think where you're headed with this is field goal percentage. So he's the only rookie I projected at higher than a 50% field goal percentage. And I actually have him translated to a 54% field goal percentage. So from that perspective, he's going to be one of the best, most helpful rookies in that category ever. Rookies just don't shoot that high. But
I had him at 53, and I think that's about
it. Yeah. Yeah, he translates to that high, and that's going to be amazingly good for a rookie. However, the free throw percentage translates to almost the exact same number.
That's the problem. That's a huge problem. That is a big problem. And he's going to have the ball in his hands
shoot
a lot, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that he's going to shoot as much as Dwight Howard does, which...
Oh, no.
But Andre Drummond, I think, is a great example.
Yep.
I think he's going to have one of the higher free throw rates. I think he might have the highest free throw rate or close to it of any of the rookies that I projected. Towns, I think I have slightly higher. But anyway, they're going to shoot, you know, free throws on 5 or 6% of their possessions. And if he shoots 50%, that's going to be not great. That's going to have the same effect, essentially, as Andre Drummond.
Yep. Which means for roto leagues, it's unless you're super brave, it's pretty much undraftable for him. Now, for head-to-head leagues, the points are going to be there to a degree. He's not going to go out and average 20 points as a rookie. I think we can say that. But, yeah, he could get 9 rebounds a game. He could get 8 rebounds a game. The thing is,
what sort of minutes do you think he's going to get?
I think he'll play about 32.
Okay.
Well, where do you see him at? I was just looking at it now.
I don't know.
30, but I think I'll go 32.
Yeah, so no, just off the top of my head, I'm thinking Nerlens Noel played like 31 last season.
Yeah.
And he's, I think Okafor has a more ready NBA body.
And Noel was coming off the injury too. Okafor's not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think that's fair. So in that offense, and the thing you have to remember is Philadelphia plays at such a fast pace, that's going to help him. So if we give him 32 minutes, I think he could do something like 14 points, 8 rebounds. And not quite a block.
That's the other thing that I want to talk about is that, yeah, you're going to get, I've got him at like 14 and 9 for his minutes, but you're not going to get a block. You're not going to get a steal. Like, he is literally going to be points, rebounds, and field goal percentage. You don't get those peripheral numbers. He's definitely not hitting threes. You don't get steals. The assists aren't going to be there. The blocks aren't going to be there. And you've got the free throw percentage in there. So his value is going to be capped because he can be great in a couple of categories, but you're just not going to get those other numbers chiming in. He's not going to be throwing in 2 or 3 block games and, you know, averaging 1.6 blocks or 1.8 blocks or anything like that. That's all going to be left to Nerlens Noel. So that puts a cap on what Okafor can do. And if you're someone who loves someone who gets points and rebounds, then he's your guy. It's Zach Randolph almost in terms of what categories he's going to contribute in. And beware, he may also even start the season off with a poor field goal percentage and get it going. I imagine he gets it going pretty quickly, but he might start off shooting less than 50%. But let's be honest, when we call it shooting, he doesn't shoot. He doesn't take jumpers at all. It's just basically post moves and layups and dunks. But that's fine.
He is one of the most skilled people in the league at that. Already, he's one of the best, footwork, low post moves guys. But, you know, you talk about points and rebounds, and I think that's going to be the thing that the narrative on him. 14 points and 8 rebounds is nothing great.
It's not 20 and 10.
Yeah, it's not, which is where Zach Randolph is.
Yep.
And Zach Randolph ranks, 75th in a roto league?
Yep.
Now, the advantage that Okafor has is that he shoots probably, Zach Randolph shoots 47%, Okafor shoots and just throwing these numbers out, that might not be exactly right, but he's in the mid 40s. Okafor might be in the mid 50s, so there is some upside there. But he's not going to get more steals than Randolph. He's not going to get more rebounds than Randolph. He's not going to get more points than Randolph.
Nope.
So you shouldn't draft him higher than Randolph unless it's a dynasty league.
And even when we're talking dynasty for Okafor, I feel that he doesn't have the ability to grow. His points will grow, his rebounds will grow, but I don't see much else growing. I don't see him ever becoming a two-block guy or getting over a steal a game or giving you three assists, that big three assists from a center, or having his free throws up at 75 or hitting threes. Like, there's no chance of any. Like, it's going to be, his points will grow, his rebounds will grow. He might be a 20 and 10 guy, but it's just going to be that and nothing else. So that means that when we're talking dynasty rankings, it's just, you're not going to develop, whereas Towns is going to be able to get, maybe he averages 3.5 assists, maybe he hits half a three, he gets 1.5 steals and 2.5 blocks, and points, and rebounds, and all these percentages, whereas Okafor feels stuck to me. That's not a bad thing in terms of his NBA career, but it's something to watch for his fantasy value.
Well, there's a reason that one of them went first overall. I mean, even though that it seems close, one in three is not necessarily all that close. Just to kind of bring that point home, let me share with you some of the, some of the comps that I came, the statistical comps from college players.
Yep.
Karl Anthony Towns statistically was very similar to like Tim Duncan, Greg Oden, Kevin Love, Joe Smith, Andrew Bogut, those type of players. Even Shaq was on one of the closer player comps for him from a stats perspective. Joe Okafor's was a lot less interesting. Big Country Bryant Reeves,
yep.
Elton Brand, Brandon Wright, Dwan Blair, Zach Randolph. So you can see the difference in the caliber of players there. Like that stuff with Karl Towns was not hyperbole.
No.
He's awesome. Yep. And Okafor was good. He was Bryant Reeves good. That was my closest statistic. If you look at just their statistics, that was the most similar player to him in college.
I'll give you another name that came up when I was looking at comparisons for Okafor, and that's J.J. Hickson.
And yeah,
that's
sure.
Not he. J.J. Hickson's not good. I'm not saying Okafor's that.
But from a fantasy perspective, you could see him get to the 16 and 10.
Yeah,
that's in play eventually in a dynasty league. So I'm not overly excited about his prospects. I am overly excited about Karl Anthony Towns.
Yes, so am I. And there's a slight spoiler for my dynasty rankings tomorrow. Matt Smith is beyond excited for Karl Anthony Towns. Beyond excited. We'll see where he's got him, but beyond.
Well, I mean, these statistical comps, these very rarely come out with big names. It's usually like Jahlil Okafor. People compare him to like Kevin McHale in real life. I mean, they compare, when they're just talking about him, and then his statistical comp is Big Country Bryant Reeves.
Yeah, exactly.
And, we look at D'Angelo Russell's was like Jay Williams.
I got Nikolaitis for D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, those type of players. Karl Anthony Towns' closest comparison was Tim Duncan.
Yeah. Tim Duncan, Greg Oden. And like, we're talking college Greg Oden.
Yeah. So there's every reason to if we're talking about dynasty, there's no reason to pick anybody else. Those are, Tim Duncan was the number one fantasy player or, top five for how many straight seasons?
Yeah. Towns has got the ability to be up there, Anthony Davis, potentially. Like, that's a big call, but he could be that in 3 or 4 years. He could be that. Which way do you want to go next? Who do you want to talk about next? You got a player that you really want to get out there and start talking about?
Can we talk about Porzingis?
Let's go.
I'm beyond interested to hear what you think about Porzingis.
I loved him.
Because the narrative is, let's just lay that out there. The narrative is, he's a good project. Like, New York, is going for the long rebuild. Like, he's not going to do anything his first season, but eventually the talent's going to win out and he's going to be a good player.
I'll call bullshit on that because, he's a long prospect. He's gonna produce this season. Who are they going to play over him? Who's going to get minutes? Derek Williams? Seriously. It's him.
Yeah, so, the idea is Carmelo Anthony is not going to play the four, even though that's his best position.
He's not
going to
do it.
In New York. He's not
No. He's not going to play it. They've said it millions of times. He's not going to play the four. It's going to be, even if Porzingis doesn't start, he will be starting by December or January. He's going to play decent minutes, and he projects as a really, really valuable fantasy guy. Now, I don't know what he's going to do in terms of this season, but you talk about Towns' potential to be great. Porzingis has potential to be great as well, probably more than anyone else in this draft, I would say.
Yeah, so I mean, if you want to just line the two up, I think next season per possession. Now, again, Towns maybe has the better opportunity. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. I think Porzingis will be a better scorer on a per possession basis. I think he'll be close to as good of a rebounder. I don't think he's the passer exactly that Towns is
going to be.
I think he's going to be. I think he's going to be better in the steals category and not far behind in the blocks category, based on the stats that I've translated from his Spanish league.
Yep, I agree with that. His defensive positioning and ability to get blocks, albeit in summer league, was well ahead of where I thought he'd be.
I think he's going to struggle at percentages like the other rookies, but I think he's going to shoot a lot of three pointers. I think he's going to be one of the top three pointers of the rookie draft, of the rookie class. I think that's going to help his value out a ton. I think he's going to be, by the end of the season, if you looked at per 36 fantasy value or however you wanted to look at that, I think he's going to be a top five rookie for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's going to be fantastic. Now, you said his percentages are going to be poor. His free throw percentage won't be poor. He's a good free throw shooter.
Well, so what do you have him at? I have him at 75%.
I haven't done his projection yet because I still struggle a bit with the European conversions, but there's no doubt to me he's over 73. I had him at 76, but it's very rudimentary.
I have him at 43% field goal percentage, which is a little low, not terrible for a rookie. But if you're going to shoot three-pointers, that's going to be about where you're going to be at. 75% is probably not going to help you at all. It will hurt you a little bit. But I've got him at the highest three-point percentage of any of the rookie class. And I've got him taking about 6% of his possessions as three-point shots. So he's gonna make, on a per-minute or per-possession basis, he's going to make as many or more three-pointers than anyone in the class. If we translate his stats over from his European stats. And I think that, you know, we have enough data that that's a pretty accurate thing to do. So I'm very high on Porzingis for just next season, as long as he gets playing time.
The thing is, now I talk about a lot, Mark, of rookies being overdrafted. Now, it depends on your league, but I think Porzingis will get underdrafted in a lot of situations because people will be like, that guy, he's too thin, he's not going to play. You hear everyone, he's not a factor for the next couple of years. And again, I say to those people, who's playing over him? Lou Amundsen? Lance Thomas? Like, who's playing ahead of him? Kylo Quinn? Maybe I could see Kylo Quinn. But Phil's obviously gone, when we want somebody to build around with a great potential, get him out there. Let him play. Yeah. And nothing he's done so far would have deterred them from thinking he can go out there and contribute 25 to 27 minutes a night at this point. I've got no doubt that he's going to be underdrafted.
So let's put him at 27 minutes. If we translate the stats, because I think this is a little easier for people to conceptualize. If we translate his stats to a 27 minutes per game in the Knicks' slow offense, which will hopefully speed up a little bit next season, but even if we put it at last season's pace, I've got him for 11.6 rebounds, a three-pointer. He's over a block, right about a steal a game. So right off the bat, he projects as a guy who's going to get you, even at 27 minutes a game, he's going to get you a three-pointer, a steal, and a block. He's going to get you a little more than a block, one-point block. He's going to get you six rebounds, which is, you know, not going to help you or hurt you, and he's going to get you enough points that he's not going to help you or hurt you. So, and then, you know, those nights that he plays 35 minutes a game, he's going to really help you. I think he'll be an excellent rookie option.
I can't wait to see him out there and see him develop. He is going to have significant fantasy value. This year, he'll have some, but down the track, he will get a lot. And he will have more value this year than a lot of people are giving him credit for, I think. I really like what I see from him. I've liked Porzingis for a couple of years, because I looked at him quite heavily before last year's draft, when he was projected to go in the top 10 then. So I did two years worth of research on him, and can't wait to see him actually get out there. Also love the fact that he's wearing number 46 as well. I like seeing a non-traditional number out there. It's always good to see a number where you go, 46, what's going on? But I always like seeing, I don't like seeing people get out there with a boring number 1 or 33 or you know, anything like that. Just throw it out completely. I tweeted this out the other day for anyone who's listening in Australia, talking about the Australian Football League, and no one wears big numbers. The biggest number anyone ever wears is, I'm trying to think, the biggest number in the league at the moment is probably 49, maybe. Like, no one ever ventures. I think the highest number anyone's ever worn has been like 55. No one ever goes above.
Is there any restrictions on it? Because I remember in high school basketball, for example, we couldn't wear anything above a 5.
No,
there's no could have two numbers, because the ref had to signal the number. Couldn't be.
No, there's no restrictions on what we're able to do with it. Like, I just people in Australian football culture have got such a weird thought process on numbers that people who start their careers come in at rookies and give a number like 35 or something. If they've been there for a couple of years, they'll change their number so they can get a lower number. It irritates me no end. Just keep the number. Just make, you get out there, you've played 3 years and you've been good in number 39. Keep number 39. Don't go and change it for number 7. Keep the big number. I want someone to go out there and wear number 87 and just go out there and rock 87. But that's completely
The Dennis Rodman of Australian football. Huh?
Someone has to do it. Wayne Gretzky. Someone's got to go out there number 99 and just start tearing it up. But then they'll get good and they go, yeah, we're going to make you number 2 now. Okay, cool, that's fine. Like, just make a number your own. It infuriates me. I hate it every year at the end of the season. It's like, oh, what numbers are going to change? Who's going to get a low number? Who cares? Keep your number. Make it your number. Anyway, that's my rant on Australian football that I'm sure you don't care anything about. Let's get back to rookies, Mark. Which way do we go now? Miles Turner. He's an interesting name. He is going to be standard league relevant, I would guess. Would you guess?
So here's where I see him being good. I think I have him as maybe the top guy in block shots next year.
Okay, yeah.
On a per possession basis, I think he's going to – he translates very well in there.
I've got him at a huge number as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, what sort of playing time do you think he's going to get with Jordan Hill there?
Well, who's his competition? Jordan Hill, Jan Mahinmi, Lavoie Allen. Paul George is going to play some 4.
Paul George.
George will play some 4. Turner will play some 4. Allen might play some 4. Like, Allen's okay. Mahinmi's okay. Jordan Hill's probably the best of that bunch. I think Turner gets 25 minutes, 24 minutes maybe.
Yeah, so at that rate, he could help in blocks. I don't think that he's going to be good enough elsewhere. So even if we say 24 minutes, I've got him at, or 25 minutes, let's say, I've got him at 1.6 blocks per game, which would be great. However, I think he's going to score under 10 points a game. He's going to be right around 6 rebounds. And he's going to shoot probably a pretty poor field goal percentage. I think he's going to have a pretty good free throw percentage he translates to.
Yep.
I don't think that's ownable in the standard league.
I initially thought, yeah, he was going to be a guy, but I'm looking at my projections here, and look, his field goal percentage comes out at 32%, which is probably not realistic. That probably needs a little bit of tweaking, but it's not a good sign.
And I've got him at 43%.
Yeah.
But so I think your point is valid. He's going to be low.
It's going to be
low. For a big guy, like how many forward center guys do you have that are 43% and score under 10 points a game?
That's the problem. He'll rebound okay. He'll chime in with half a 3 a game. The block numbers will be there, but yeah, it is going to be. Look, it depends. He could go out there and play 33 minutes. They go, we're just running Miles Turner out there. Yeah, don't worry about Mahinmi. Don't worry about Hill. It depends what they do, but I find it hard for them to think that they're going to go out there and go, let's give 35 minutes to this guy. I love his potential. I think he's got a lot to offer in the future. Mahinmi, Allen, Hill, these guys aren't the future. Turner's got the chance to be the future for this team, but they don't want to be the future. They want to compete now. They got Paul George back. Brought in Monte Ellis, George Hill's there. They want to compete now. So Hill will probably be the guy. Jordan Hill will be the guy. And Turner.
Or Solomon Hill.
They've got every Hill in the NBA, I think I read somewhere. Every Hill plays for the Pacers now.
Yeah. Now, so if you tell me Miles Turner can get 33 minutes a game, I think he's probably like a version of Nerlens Noel from last year that doesn't. He's not going to get as many steals, but his free throw percentage is going to actually help you. So,
yes.
You know, 11 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks with a pretty good free throw percentage, that could be very valuable. The field goal percentage is still going to hurt you. He's not going to get a ton of assists or steals, but, you know, so he's another guy. It depends a ton on the playing time. But I'm kind of with you. Between the veterans they have and Paul George playing 4, I don't know that I see him creeping over that 30 minute a night mark. But when he does, I think that's when you want to pounce on him.
Here's a question. Willie Cauley-Stein or Miles Turner for next season? Head-to-head drafts.
Interesting. So we're throwing out percentages. Let me, you know, we just talked about where I had Turner. Let's, you know, if I put Cauley-Stein at the same sort of...
I think Cauley-Stein gets about 26 minutes maybe for Cauley-Stein. And he's going to contribute in blocks as well. Probably, my numbers don't project him to come out as high on blocks as Turner.
I don't either. I mean, Turner I have as the number one guy for block shots next year. I don't have Cauley-Stein as high. I think where Cauley-Stein can help you more is in the steals category. I think he's going to be just as good as steals as he is in blocks. Kind of think about Nerlens Noel that way.
Yep.
I think he's going to be a worse scorer than Miles Turner. I think he's going to be a worse rebounder than Miles Turner. Obviously worse at blocks. His free throw percentage is going to be poor. I think his field goal percentage is going to be a little better. So I would probably rather take Miles Turner if you assume that both of them were going to play the same amount of minutes.
I think you can sort of safely assume that they'll be like a backup big man. We don't know what Sacramento is going to do. I would say they play Rudy Gay quite a bit at the four, or Omri Caspi there as well, and have Cauley-Stein play a little bit of four, and Cousins play some four, and Cauley-Stein at the five. I have him scoring not too bad, like 8.5 points for 27 minutes. His rebounds are there, and the block numbers, which people think will be big, won't be quite as big as they anticipate. I think that'll be the problem with him. He'll be a high 40% field goal shooter as well. The steals, he could get a steal a game. He could get 1.5 blocks and a steal a game, potentially, if he played, you know, 30 minutes. And that's really useful. But it really depends on what other areas you're willing to trade off. It's going to be hard to draft him or to justify drafting him for standard leagues, though.
Yep. I'm not drafting him either. I mean, listen, the fact is, if any rookie you think is going to get over 32, 33 minutes a game, you draft them, because these translations, why they've proven to be pretty effective in the past, they're wrong sometimes, you know? And so just the upside of having an unknown player getting 32 to 33 minutes a game, I think you have to draft them. But until you feel like they're pretty sure going to get 30 to 32 minutes a game, you can only really draft the guys that are going to be special, like Karl Anthony Towns. And Porzingis at the same time, I think, rates that high.
Now, talk about guys who potentially have minutes available to them. Jerian Grant, another guy in New York. Langston Galloway is not an NBA caliber player. Jose Calderon was terrible last year. Jerian Grant showed that he can be a guy that I think that might not start the season as the starter, but could comfortably end the season as the starting point guard in New York. How do you see his numbers? Do they look fantasy relevant?
So he was my top... top rookie as far as assists per possession. I think he came out right on top, right above campaign, actually.
He's another guy that I definitely want to touch on.
Yeah, so I think, you know, assists are kind of a scarcity in fantasy leagues. I think in that from that perspective, he could be valuable. You know, again, if we put him, say he does get to that 30-minute-a-night mark, I could see him something like, I don't know, 10, 11 points, 5 assists, maybe a steal.
Yep.
Shooting kind of a lower percentage. So that doesn't sound super great, but 5 assists is worth owning almost by itself.
Yeah, 5 assists and a steal is pretty much where it's at. Now, he could shoot under 40% for a big chunk of the season. That's a possibility with pretty much every rookie guard, that they can shoot that poorly. He shot 48% in college, but it's completely different. It's so much more attacking and getting to the rim, which he's not going to have quite the ability to do. He's a 78% free throw shooter in college last year, but it's assists and steals, and it comes down to opportunity. And I do think that there is an opportunity for him to get a starting role at some point during the season. So he's probably not a draftable guy, but he's a guy that when you see that he becomes owned, or they're giving him 25 minutes a night and he's getting 5 assists, then yeah, you want him. And then you think, yeah, his minutes will start increasing. And then maybe we get 6 assists from him, and then maybe we get 11 points, and then he becomes a really, really useful player.
Right.
Let's talk campaign now. Now, he is going to do pretty much nothing this season. That would be my take on it. Do you see it differently?
I the potential's there, right? Like he's one of the top.
His potential came out massive.
Yeah, he translates to be one of the best scorers and one of the best assist guys in the draft.
His
steal rate is going to be higher than Jeremy Grant. But where does he play? Like
that's the problem.
Yeah,
DJ Augustine and Russell Westbrook ahead of him. And people go, yeah, he's going to play 25 minutes next to Westbrook and behind him. Like Augustine is there. DJ Augustine is going to be the backup point guard for the Thunder. They're not going to go, like, we're just going to chuck in their rookie who's never played to play 25 minutes. Like Augustine can run things. He ran it when Westbrook went out for his couple of games at the end of last season and put up nice numbers. It's going to be Augustine that plays those numbers. And if anyone's going to play next to Westbrook, it's going to be Augustine. It's not going to be Payne.
And they've still got Deion Waiters, and they've still got
Anthony Morrow,
and Andre Robertson. 25 minutes.
And don't forget, they just signed Josh Eustace as well. Not that that means anything for anybody. So do not think that I'm endorsing Josh Eustace. That was a joke. Haha.
They're gonna finally let him play some minutes. Huh?
Yeah, they're gonna give him some money instead of the $25,000 he got for playing in the D League last year. But campaign, like my per 100 possession numbers for him came out like crazy, like 22 points, 9.5 assists, 3 steals, just like insane numbers. But he's not going to have the opportunity. He's a great guy, I think, for a dynasty stash for maybe 3 years down the track when he starts just demanding minutes and they have to go all Reggie Jackson on him and go, you're going to have to go somewhere and we're going to have to get something because, you know, someone's going to offer you a max deal in restricted free agency. We're not a max, but you know what I mean? Because his potential is there. But for the next 2 seasons, I just don't see it for him.
Yeah, and you know, when somebody gets hurt and he's going to get 30 minutes a night, there's a guy that is going to be a great DraftKings play or a...
Yep, Mitch McGarry style.
You know, pick him up for a week or whatever, but I don't see the path to him getting... You know, again, we're talking that these guys are maybe okay on the fringe at 28 minutes a game, but what you're really hoping is that they get to 32 to 34 minutes a game and really end up in the top 50 or something. Yep. There's no way that campaign has that sort of upside.
A lot has to go wrong in Oklahoma City for that to happen.
Yeah.
Now, another
I don't think he would have played that many minutes last season, even after Reggie Jackson left.
No, not with Scott Brooks.
As much help as they needed? Yeah. It just wouldn't have happened.
We don't know what Billy Donovan's going to do in terms of his rookie playing policy, but yeah, in years gone by, he would have done nothing. Now, another guy, Mark, who's stuck behind a lot of players who oozes potential to me is Bobby Portis in Chicago. You already hear stuff coming out of Chicago that Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah aren't going to start together. There's Taj Gibson there who is battling an ankle problem and battling the fact that he's old and never started in the NBA regularly, so that really limits his upside in my opinion. There's Nikola Mirotic, who was pretty much sensational at times last year, and Portis fits in there as the fifth guy. Like Payne, I really like what he can do. The projections came out really high for him, from his rebounding for me. Steals and block rate came out pretty nice. Decent scorer. We saw him hit some threes as well, which is not something I necessarily anticipated for him. But where's the opportunity? He's a 2 or 3 year stash guy as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, he's the fifth guy. So until they make a move.
Don't expect anything from him this year.
Mirotic, was versatile enough. They could play him. They could kind of like squint and pretend that he was a small forward for minutes for stretches last year. Bobby Portis, I don't think, is going to be playing any small forward.
No. He's not going to get minutes. He'll play 12 minutes, 14 minutes, nothing. But it's one that if you're in it for the long haul and you're rebuilding and you're going to get someone cheap like that, you know, you expect it 2 or 3 years' time that if you had campaign and Bobby Portis on the dynasty team, we could be seeing, you know, some real value that you can possibly get for cheap because they're pretty much going to do zero for 2 years.
What do you think the upside is on Portis? Like, say, so 2-3 years, he gets some playing time. Like, what type of player are we looking at?
I think he can be a guy who is aggressive in terms of his ability to get steals. I think we can see a 1.2 steals, a 1.5 blocks guy, a 15 and 8 sort of guy. If everything goes well and he's in a decent role, he'll struggle maybe with his free throw percentage a bit. He might chip in 0.3, 0.4 triples a game. I think he's got some fantasy sneakiness. Aggressive rebounder, steals and blocks are going to be big for him. He's not going to be a 2-blocker game guy, but he's going to be enough where he's a real factor in those defensive numbers, and that's going to carry a lot of his value, I think. He's just so yeah, aggressive on the court.
Cool.
Where should we head next? Anyone else we want to look at in particular?
No, not necessarily. Do you want to talk? I mean, maybe something that would be cool since we've both done per possession projections is what if we looked at the top guys in each category, each fantasy category, and kind of gave people an eye to who to look out for. These guys might not get a lot of playing time to start with, but if they do, they can excel in certain categories.
That would be great if I had mine actually listed in a list, but I've got them all on individual sheets. But you can do yours, and then I'll go through and tell you how I see them.
Well, and I feel like ours are very, you know, we're not using like totally different methods here. So
no,
I think they're going to be pretty similar. The stats are the stats, right?
Yeah, we're getting
which category do you want to start with?
Let's go with points.
Okay. So I mentioned already, Okafor comes out as my top scorer on a per possession basis. Campaign is next. Porzingis is next. Kaminsky is next. He's a guy we haven't brought up yet, but he projects to score a lot of points, I think, next year relative to the other guys. And my fifth guy is somewhat of a guy I would guess we didn't plan on talking about. It's Tyler Harvey from Orlando, a second-round pick.
Yeah, didn't really have him on the schedule to talk about. But he's an interesting guy. He had some moments. A couple, you know what? Second-round shooting guards, they develop more than you anticipate. I think you get more sort of surprise second-round mm-hmm. shooting guards than other positions. They tend to slide under the radar. So he's definitely a name. Look, not that Orlando don't have a whole stack of wing players there, but he's someone to keep an eye on.
Yep. You want to talk about blocks?
Talk about, well, Campaign was my, out of those guys, Campaign was my number one scoring guy per possession, then Okafor.
Yeah, and I had them right by each other within 0.3 points. So.
Yep.
Porzingis is right there too.
Okay, blocks.
Blocks, I've got Miles Turner number one, and he's pretty clear number one, actually. I've got him at 3.3 blocks per 100 possessions, and Karl-Anthony Towns is next at 2.7. Porzingis is next, which should show you, and he's not far from Towns. So I think that there is going to be a lot of value in a guy who can shoot three-pointers and block shots.
Definitely.
A lot of the other guys I have on this up here high on blocks are not going to – I mean, Jordan Mickey from Boston.
I really like Jordan Mickey for a couple of – he's a deep dynasty stash, but 2 or 3 years' time, I think that he can develop into a decent fantasy guy.
And they have no rim protectors. They didn't even sign one. So, I mean, you know, maybe Brad Stevens falls in love and wants to go with him. The other guy, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying his name, but I only want to bring him up because he's on Philadelphia, and any second-round pick on Philadelphia could turn into something, although they have the big guys kind of locked up, I think. Is it Richern Holmes?
I think it's Rishon.
Rishon?
I think it's Rishon.
Right.
Rishon Holmes. He just signed a pretty big second round contract, like 4 years, if I'm not mistaken, 3 years.
Okay.
He just signed, yeah, so they value him, definitely. He's going to be in their rotation.
His projections are quite good.
Yeah, no, I do like him. I think there's a lot to like about him from an NBA talent perspective and from a fantasy perspective. But you're right, Noel Okafor, if Embiid ever plays, there's a lot of other bodies there. But that doesn't mean that he can't be turned into a trade asset and get onto another team and start developing into a guy who can get something happening. There's something there with him, definitely. I had Turner and Towns as 1 and 2 as well. I had Turner at 3.5 and Towns at 3.1 per 100 possessions.
So steals. And the number one steals guys I've got is DeLon Wright in Toronto. Now he's buried behind the point guard. He's buried behind Lowry and Corey Joseph, so he's not going to see the court. I'm surprised that they picked him considering their offseason plan. He's a senior, so he seems like somebody who could come in, play right away. But
I love them picking him until they signed Joseph. Like they traded Vasquez and went, yep, this is great. He's gonna have a role. He's gonna play, you know, 18, 20 minutes. He's gonna be a really strong defender. He can sort of shoot sometimes. But then they went and signed Corey Joseph, and I just got all confused with it all.
Yeah. Daron Hillard from Detroit, I have pretty high up on the steals list. RJ Hunter, and we already talked about Campaign and Emmanuel Mudiay. So those are some of the guys that I projected as to get the most steals next season.
So none of those guys are really going to play big roles at all, apart from Moutier, obviously.
I mean, Moutier. RJ Hunter, I suppose, could get in the rotation. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like Boston has about 20 players on their roster that can all play decent minutes. Like their roster,
but nobody's really good, so you don't know who's going to actually.
I don't know what to do with them. Let's talk about their roster for a sec, segueing completely out of rookies. Okay, so we've got Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas as point guards. We've got Terry Rozier as a point guard. We've got RJ Hunter, Avery Bradley as two guards. There's Evan Turner that's a 1, 2, and 3. There's Jay Crowder. And that's probably the least confusing.
Perry Jones.
That's the least confusing part of their roster. Then you get to the big men. And then we see today that they're potentially going to start.
Did you mention Avery Bradley?
Avery Bradley, yeah. I don't know if I did. But he's another.
He's going to lead the team in minutes. Probably. He's going to be the highest in minutes probably on the whole team.
Well, apparently they came out today. I think it was, I probably got this wrong, Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe came out, and this is going to be the likely Celtics starting five. Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Amir Johnson, and David Lee. So we're going to have on the bench Isaiah Thomas, Evan Turner, Jared Sullinger, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Zeller, Terry Rozier, RJ Hunter,
Perry Jones.
It's mind-boggling. What happens in that front? That front court is undraftable, any of them, in standard leagues.
Yeah.
It's like David Lee.
The problem is they have 15 good bench players.
It is crazy. It is.
So how do you rotate them?
Everyone just gets 18 minutes each. I don't know what they do. It is really, really weird. And it's going to make guys like Marcus Smart, who can be a real fantasy star, hard. It's going to be hard to deal with him. Isaiah Thomas, when he gets minutes, he's probably the safest of the lot, but still, it's worrying.
Because he can do well in short minutes.
Yep. Yeah, right? He can play 27 minutes and score 20 points.
And be awesome. Yeah, he can play 25 minutes a game and still be relevant in fantasy league, and not many players can do that.
Yep, and no one else on that roster can. Yeah, Sullinger, Olynyk, these guys, if they get 22 minutes off the bench, then there's no point in them for fantasy leagues. And it might be great for Boston, but it doesn't help us as fantasy guys trying to get value out of them. There's just too many guys, and guys I didn't even talk about, like Jordan Mickey. He's going to be buried down as the sixth big man who could potentially, work out a role and play 10 minutes. It's just not going to happen. It's just a really weird sort of situation with that team.
Amir Johnson? Did you mention Amir
Johnson? Yeah, Amir Johnson as well. Oh, there's just bodies all over the place. I'm just happy that Amir Johnson.
Paid player besides Lee.
David.
I think he's the highest paid player besides David Lee, who they traded for.
Let's just talk David Lee for 1 second. There's a lot of hype about David Lee in fantasy circles about, we're going to make sure we draft David Lee. I'm not on board with it at all. He lost his starting job in Golden State before he got injured, not because he got injured. It wasn't like he got injured, let's put Draymond in, look how good Draymond is. It was Draymond is going to start, and then David Lee was injured as well at the same time. But Draymond was always starting over David Lee. It wasn't a case of he lost his spot due to injury, and that's why he had a bad season. Let's remember, David Lee's a 20-10 all-star. David Lee's not that guy anymore. He's just not. He's a liability in so many areas, and he's not going to be 20-10, especially with all these names we mentioned just floating around, sitting there. I don't think I mentioned Tyler Zeller as well, another guy who they got as a big man there, who they started for big chunks of last season.
Yeah.
It's weird. I want to get your thoughts on Justice Winslow.
Okay. What do you want to know about Justice Winslow?
Is he any good? Does he have any fantasy relevance for this season? Probably not, or moving forward. Yeah. And I'm doubtful he ever becomes a real fantasy force.
So, I think the funny thing about about Winslow is that everybody said, hey, the Pistons were idiots. They should have picked Winslow or Johnson. And the funny thing is their stats translate to almost the exact same player.
They do.
They're very similar. So, I think he could be a very skilled player. I think he could be a huge addition. But, think about how effective Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is, for example. I'm not saying they're the same player, but think about how skilled Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is and how much difference he makes on the court, and then how much fantasy value he has. And I think Winslow is just one of those players that may be better in real life than he is as a fantasy option.
I would agree with that.
I don't think he could put up some fantasy numbers. I think he could be an okay scorer, an okay rebounder. He'd get you some steals, pointers.
He looks to me to be a guy who'll be a better defender than a better stats guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So like Kid Gilchrist, elite defender, but it doesn't show up anywhere.
Yep, exactly. And like Kid Gilchrist, he'll do okay in the defensive stats, but I don't see him being a monster in the defensive stats.
No, he's not going to go out there like Kawhi Leonard and get 1.2 blocks and 2.5 steals. Yep. He's not going to do that. If you're getting him in a dynasty league and hoping for a breakout next year when Luol Deng is gone, yeah, he'll probably be the starter, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to automatically become a top 70 fantasy guy. He would maybe still struggle to get inside the top 100. I could be wrong about that, but he projects as a...
My closest comp for him was Ron Artest.
Okay. Who did I have? Jamal Mashburn, Kalina Azubuike, Luol Deng, Chuck Hayes.
Yeah, Luol Deng, interestingly enough, came out really high for him, yep. Considering that's who's going to be playing behind.
So it's interesting with him, but I don't hold high fantasy hope. I think he'd be a good player, but he was really disappointing in summer league. But I think I don't hold high fantasy hopes for him.
Yep, I'm with you.
Anyone else you want to really cover off out of these rookies before we go?
No, I think we got everybody.
Yeah, look, if you've got any questions about anyone specifically, just hit up either myself or Mark on Twitter, and we can talk about them. But I think we did.
Hey, one last question.
Yeah, go.
Who's the guy on Philadelphia that you feel like the second rounder who's not necessarily great, but you feel like could get some playing time? Is there one? I just feel like Philadelphia is such a good option for that sort of like last year, we saw KJ McDaniels have some fantasy value.
I think it's going to be technically a rookie, but not from this year's draft. I think it's going to be Pierre Jackson.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, it definitely could.
A second rounder from about 2 years ago. They don't. They've got Tony Roten, who's not a basketball player, let alone a point guard. They've got Isaiah Cannon, Isaiah Cannon's a guy that we talk about Isaiah Thomas, but Isaiah Cannon, he could play 23 minutes off the bench. Be standard league relevant because he'll hit your 2.1 threes and hit 86% of his free throws and get 12 points in 22 minutes. And that can be useful. And that's pretty much what he did last year when he came over. Started, got demoted, but still hit 2 triples a game. I don't know what they do with him, but they definitely need his outside shooting. So he's going to have a role there. Pierre Jackson could be the guy that surprised. I just don't know what they're doing at point guard. I hope it's not Roden because it's an offense to basketball to watch him play. I would love them to give it to Jackson. Wait and see. He was okay. You know who else was really good in summer league for them? Scotty Wilbekin.
Who?
He was good. And they signed him.
He was undrafted, right?
Yeah, he played in Australia last year for Cairns, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, is he a point guard type player? That's kind of what seemed like what I read about him. I mean, yep. He was a good passer, at least.
That's right, yeah. He can play a little bit off the ball as well, hit some threes, but he's a one or a two. He's a combo sort of guy, probably more towards the one. But he's a guy to keep an eye on because they did sign him to a multi-year deal as well.
Nice.
All right, Mark. Well, that's it. That was a good chat. I was happy with that. Where can everybody find you on Twitter again?
It's at Mark F. Roberts. Mark is spelled with a C. It looks like, Josh, we got a request on here for a duet. I don't think we're going to do it this time.
Who's
got a request
us?
On Twitter.
Oh, did we? I haven't seen it.
Starks Industries.
Oh,
at Starks underscore Industries.
Now, whoever this is, I don't know who this is that is doing this. He's tweeting always in the form of Iron Man. I'm convinced it's Robert Downey Jr. hiding his fantasy basketball addiction. That's my thing. Every tweet's got like a hashtag Iron Man or Iron Man out or something on it. I'm convinced it's Robert Downey Jr. I hope it is. I hope that is you, Starks Industries. I did question him about it the other day, and he said, no, I'm not Robert Downey, but I am keeping my identity secret. So who knows? Who knows what it's about? But I don't know if there's going to be a duet necessarily. We probably need to rehearse that, I think, for next time.
We'll practice.
Yeah,
we're definitely. On to you, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Now, you can't fool us.
Yeah, I know who you are. I know you're hiding. You're not really hiding that much if you're putting yourself out there as Tony Stark's, but that's I've lost completely my train of thought there. Mark, RotoWire, what have you got coming up in terms of what you're producing? Any articles, projections? When do they come out?
Well, man, right now we are in. I'm knee deep in projections, spreadsheets, and all that sort of good stuff. So, as far as content that will go live, I am. I'm radio silent right now. I'm spending all my time just trying to get these projections done. Look at each player and look at what holds in store for them. That should be coming out on the RotoWire website in the next, I would say, 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
And that will give us all of our rankings, and that will give us all of our auction values, and the you know, all the stats that we kind of base our draft kit on. So good stuff. But and you know, sometimes I get excited because I'm in a spreadsheet and I see something interesting, I'll tweet it out. But that's about all you'll be hearing from me for the next few weeks.
Now, I've got a question for you. How long does it take you looking at a spreadsheet to start, like, losing your mind when you start looking? How many hours does it take when you go, oh, I can't look at these numbers anymore? How long does it take?
Man, you know, 5 years ago, I would have said, I don't have a lot of tolerance for that, but I really, you know, that's what I do for work. And so
fair enough.
I've built up my tolerance. I can spend all day at work doing that, and then I come home and I do the same thing for, you know, my RotoWire projections.
I will do it, and I'll sit there, and I might do it for 3 or 4 hours, and then I look up, and I look around the room, I put the computer down, everything's spinning, and I just think, like, I don't even think what day is it. I go, what year is it? I feel like I'm sitting there, like, I haven't showered in weeks. You know, what's happened? Who's the, you know, what do I, have I missed out on life? Like, has someone been knocking on my door? I feel like I've just been absorbed into some sort of numerical black hole, and I come out of it just feeling like I've come down off an acid trip or something. It's a weird feeling, but that's enough about my Saturday nights.
I think there's no doubt that we've missed out on some of real life. That's a definite.
Okay, now reminder, myself and Matt Smith talking about our dynasty rankings, debating them, and remember, before you listen to that show, they are roto rankings, so there will be some omissions from my list. I'll put it that way. From the top 100 roto dynasty guys, there will be some omissions because it is roto.
That's a fancy way to say that free throw percentage, guys who kill your free throw percentage, are going to be low or out of the list. Yeah, right?
Andre Drummond's not in the top 100. I'll say it now. He's not in the top 100. And yeah, Matt sent me a message today. He goes, did you like forget Andre Drummond? I went, no, I just didn't put him in. So we'll be debating that tomorrow. Good luck to everyone in the Red Rock listener leagues that are chugging along. We're doing slow offline drafts. So that's, some people, taking it a little slower than others, but it's all right. We're getting through it. We've got a lot of time before the season starts, and with people all over the world in multiple time zones, it's probably the only way we're able to do those with, you know, without trying to organize a live draft time for me to do 12 leagues with people from Europe and Asia and Australia and North America and wherever else the people are from, all over the place, Caribbean areas, lots of people all over the place. So that's the way we're doing it. Good luck for that. And Mark, good luck in your spreadsheet haze.
Thank you. It was good to talk to you, Josh.
You too, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Don't forget to follow Mark on Twitter and me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Head across to the YouTube channel, the Instagram page, the Facebook page, all those sort of things. And do me a favor, leave me a review on iTunes. That is always much appreciated. I will have some big news for the podcast coming. Maybe not next episode, but in one of the coming ones, and you will hear about that as soon as I can confirm it. Mark, great to speak to you again. I'll see you later.
See you later, man.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.